someone who is a businessman. He's comes from a business background, very busy with his various roles in New Zealand right now. Brent Rehana. Brent, kia ora. Nice to have you on Radio Wātea this evening.
Kia ora whae, mire peka. Tēnei pō, me te hunga whakarongo ki tō kaupapa me te erirangi o Wātea hoki. Nā reira, me mihi kau atu.
So, what have you been doing? Can I just ask you, what have you been doing with yourself lately? Busy as with all your mahi?
Yes, definitely. I was recently over in Australia talking to some building, some construction people, and they've just come back over here. They just left on Monday. So we're doing some things over in WA, and that's in construction in mines. And they're looking to do that over here in New Zealand as well. So it's a overseas conglomerate, overseas funded, but one of the guys is in Melbourne, and we've got local construction, and we're looking at doing that right across the Motu. So that's very exciting. That's one of the projects. One of the other ones is in forestry, but not in pine. We don't want to go back into that. It's in redwoods, and so redwoods do different things, and they're not for everyone, but I think it's appropriate in some of the places that we can't do mass forestry, and it's appropriate for some of the places that they're very difficult to get to, and you know, we can use different trees for different uses. So yeah, it's a bit of a mixed bag. And then, of course, I'm working in the health sector to try and bring up our Māori health into a place of equity. So I'm working in the equity and health space.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, yes, that's right. We'll see in the budget perhaps something in there in regards to health. But before we just talk about the budget, can I just ask you, you mentioned the redwoods, and I've only really seen the redwoods in Rotorua. What's their... the time of from woe to go planting to maturity? Are we talking about 35 years? I thought it was longer than that.
Well, redwoods are, you're right, they do. They will grow for up to 2,000 years. So that's the longevity of the trees. But they will coppice. In other words, you can plant straight into a stump. So when you harvest, it's a different kind of harvest, but their roots, they don't have a taproot, which is what pines have. Taproots go down and they sort of carve up our land. They reach out and they will talk to each other, so you can put redwoods in, and they will actually knit and hold the land. So when we're talking about our land going into our river streams, that's what pine does, and that's what redwood prevents. So into maturity to logging, they will actually grow faster than pines in some areas. So that's a plus, but they're not for every area. So the ones in Rotorua that you see in Scion are actually poorly grown because it's not the right environment for them. So mainly up around the north area, so over in California they've got a different climate, and I think one of the good things is they're quite hardy in terms of they hold water in their bark, but they also prevent it's very difficult for bugs to get through to them, so that's a plus. They will start sequestering carbon earlier than pine, and they will sequester carbon right up until 2,000 years. So it's an intergenerational tree. That's the difference between what pine is. You know, after 40 years, you basically have to go and harvest, and so that means looking at when that harvest is going to be and making sure that you get it at the right time. But obviously then that is focused on what the market is doing. So if the market isn't right and the pines are right, you're going to miss the window. That's some of the hit and miss that we have with these. So redwoods will mature at around about 35 years, but they will grow faster. They will between 28 and 35, but they will grow faster than pine.
Really? Oh, well, there you go. There you go. Right. And oh, well, I wasn't aware of that because we don't grow them to any great extent in New Zealand, do we, redwoods? Or am I just not aware of that, Brent?
We do have the redwood company that has been diversifying forestry, and I know Ngāti Hine has gone and looked at that, but not as a wood, because pine basically has saturated the market, and so you need to. It's a different kind of forestry, whereas pine, we have labour forces that are very mobile, and redwoods require a different kind of forestry. So it's about having foresters around the redwood forest all the time, unlike the mobile workforces that we have. So it's not for every location, and you do need to treat them in a different way.
Yes. Oh well, I'm not even sure these days what how our the price of our timber's going, radiata pine. I mean, I used to try and follow it. I was a director years ago of Māori Investments, but that's long gone, and so I don't sort of follow what the prices are now. But there was a time, I think it was only about 12 months ago, when the prices of our timber was not looking too good at all.
No, you're right, and that's some of the risks that we've got to take with that. We really are dictated by what the overseas market is after. The reality is, it's a big risk for us.
Well, it is, and I guess, of course, we've got to put onto that the transport costs and everything. So we might be at the bottom of the of well, we are at the bottom of the world, and of course, anything that we want to export, well, you've got to add on the cost of transport. Well, actually, import or export, cost of transport and getting it here and getting it out of the country is just it's quite well that adds to the cost, doesn't it? And it all that's the pricing difference. So tell me, can I just ask you then, Brent, in the for the budget later or well, this week actually, obviously on Thursday, is there anything in any areas that you'd like to think that the government might look kindly towards in budget time?
Well, I when we talk about budgets, it's not so much about the fiscal that's going to change. It's about how they address it. And especially coming into an election, because it is very, as it's more political than it is fiscal at this point anyway. And especially when we've gone through these two really influential weather patterns that have affected us, and what the government's looking at is they're going to have to stump up half the cost of both of those effects. So that's a big cost. We're going to go into a deficit. That's the first bit. But it's about how and where that deficit can be managed. So it's about when we turn that around. We know that we're going to be in this 2024, 2025. The predictions are that that'll soften. But it's about what happens to the average worker and the average home loan, because that's one of the biggest factors. People not being able to pay their home loan, people being under stress in the cost of living. So how are they going to soften that blow for us? And when I'm looking at what both National are doing and Labor, what they're basically doing is going out and selling red herrings to the public. We know that we're going to be in a recession. That's obvious. But it's how do we come out of it, and what is the effect on the average person? And that's what I want to see. And so for me, it's about how that cost of living is going to affect us right at the grocery store, right at the petrol pump, and when we're paying, how that's going to affect our home loans. And so with the official cash rate, and we know the Reserve Bank has been, aggressively increasing the official cash rate, and so the banks basically have to follow suit on that. So we are going to be paying more on our home loans. So, that's not good news for those with a mortgage. But then how does that affect our everyday use of transport and of our grocery bills? And those are the things that I think the government can do something about. And what they've done is really talk about the infrastructure And then to try and soften the blow and saying that how well we are off. And I guess that's all well and good if we put that in a world, if we measure it against, the 36 countries that we can measure it against, and we are looking good in that space, but that's not really going to help us in our day-to-day lives. And I think, for me, I'm looking at cost of living, price of petrol, and our public transport. And I think that will, home loans, and that will really be the cost to our everyday pocket.
Yeah, and I think that's what the most New Zealanders will hope from the budget: some easing in their pocket, so that they can meet their daily needs. Because, so many people tell me, Brent, that if they get an unexpected bill, it just throws them completely, and so they do pay. But what they've said to me is they skimp somewhere else, and it's usually the only area where they can skimp is actually on their food bill. And, because, the other costs are pretty much, you've got to pay your petrol, you've got to get to work, you've got to pay your power, and then, of course, your rent. So those costs come out first. So the only place where there is room for some movement has to be in your food bill. So there's got to be some easing there for the families.
And, the poor old grocery shop owners, and I say poor old, they'd be getting a raw deal in the media saying that, they're making profits hand over fist. And I had a conversation with a store owner, one of our very own, and what he was saying is, well, we have to compete. That's the first thing, and we are dictated by by the industry to a large degree. And let's not forget that they also have employees that they've got to look after too. But that comes down to the basket of goods that we've got to import. And so they're affected by the same things that everybody else is: transport costs, wage costs, and overheads such as power and rent as well. So, everybody's in the same squeeze. And what I'm hearing from Chris Hipkins when he talks about what his budget plans are going to be, they're going to be bread and butter issues. So when they were talking about this, the tax that they were going to tax the rich, I think that was a bit of a furphy, because they, there's no way that they could come up with a piece of legislation in the short time period that they had since they've done the study and start putting a tax on for wealthy. And we were talking about the super rich, not somebody that's, got the $1 million house, which is just the average. We were talking about those people that are, super wealthy, own assets here and overseas. And it was really interesting to hear Ian Taylor actually go against the grain and said, I'd be happy to pay extra tax.
Mm.
I'm already saying that, and I was quite warmed by that, because, he's one of those in that category, has done well for himself, but he's happy to pay the extra tax. So maybe it is something that the government, if not in, it won't happen in this budget, but surely that's something that should happen so that we can spread the risk and spread the load,
Absolutely.
So we can look after those that are below the breadline.
Well, I do think that, it has been highlighted that there are a few hundred New Zealanders who don't pay, well, actually, who pay less than some people who are on the minimum wage. So, and that's in terms of tax. But I'd love to see that I'd like to think that the government would, whichever government would consider, well, it certainly won't be a national and ACT government, but I'd like to see the introduction of capital gains tax. I think that would be very helpful. I mean, we're one of the few, if not the only country in the OECD that doesn't have a capital gains tax. That's unbelievable.
It is. And when we look at our CPI, where we sit in terms of the 36 countries that we can measure against, we're actually at the lower end. So our CPI is lower. And then when we look at our net debt, and if we were to relate it to the UK, Australia, and Canada, and the US, we're per capita lower in our net debt. So we shouldn't be in a position where we've got people below the breadline. And I do think it's about evening it out from the top. But I think what we need to do is and the study that the government went into, what it did find is that if there was a marginal tax on those super rich, on those 100 that are earning more and paying less, if there was a marginal tax, it would certainly make a difference to those below the breadline. And I think that's a good idea.
Yes, I do too. And I mean, I was listening the other day to someone who's been on two of the tax reviews, and he said that we do need to make some changes. But then, of course, as you know, Brent, you've got to have a government that that is willing, you know, has the appetite to change the tax system. And if there's no appetite, no matter how much the cause might be right and justified, the fact if a government doesn't have the appetite, if they believe they'll lose part of their constituency, they won't do it, no matter how you know how right it would be. So that tells you something about politics, doesn't it?
Yeah, you're right. And it was funny listening to Christopher Luxon talking about what his one of the policies that they would put up, and which was to give everybody a taxpayer's receipt. In other words, they would sort of taxpayers would get a receipt, and which would tell them how much tax they paid as a percentage, and in relation to what they earned, in relation to everybody else in those sorts of tax brackets. And I thought that doesn't actually, you know, that doesn't put anything in my pocket. It just makes me feel better or worse. I don't know. So, you know, I'm saying for if you're going to come up with a policy, make it helpful. If you're going to come up with a policy, make it a change for the better rather than just wallpapering over the cracks.
Well, that's true. That's true. It is. Tell me, I just saw today, and you might have a comment on this, because I think in a time when people are struggling, and as you and I know, Brent, most people they live up to their income level. You know, some people mightn't, but usually you live up to your income level. And I see where I think the mayor of Auckland, Wayne Brown, has indicated that 400 staff are likely to lose their jobs as they try to restructure themselves in terms of making the costs across the costs cut cost cuts across the whole of the council in Auckland. And that seems to me to be, my goodness, you know, there are people who have obviously got mortgages. There are people who have got, some of them might have just changed jobs in the last 6 months. They've got commitments and all of this. It just seems to me that, well, that's something else that's going to be loaded onto families. And I worry sometimes, Brent, about the mental health of New Zealanders as we're looking, staring down this, increase in cost of living, et cetera.
Yeah, you're right. I wouldn't want to be in Wayne Brown's shoes. He does have a difficult job, but he does need to cut back, and it does need to come from somewhere, whether that be from the infrastructure or the employees. So as lo you know, obviously then, as long as it's a balanced and informed approach that he's taking, and we don't want to see people in shock. So hopefully he can restructure by moving them into other places, other spaces. So maybe it isn't just a job cut, but it's a that moving them into other, you know, because we can do this in a way that people can go and retrain and find other employment. So yes, it does need to be done in Auckland. I you know, when Rodney Hyde changed it to a super city, that was good, you know, but we seem to go from centralization to decentralization, and each time it costs us. And so every time we have this change, it's the poor people in the middle that get caught. So, you know, it is a fact of life, and it's about how he does it, not the fact that he's doing it. I think he should, but it's about how he does it. That's more important.
That's right. And I suppose, well, there's never a good time when you have to cut your cloth to suit your circumstances, and certainly not to the extent that Auckland City has to. But to me, it just feels at this time, with the cost of living increases, for somebody to be, because I, the report that I looked at some time ago now, and it was talking about senior managers, actually. That wasn't talking about your tier two or three staff. It was talking about your real senior managers. And it said most of them, it was interesting, actually, Brent, most of them did not have 3 months in reserve in terms of, savings. And so if they don't have 3 months in reserve, you can imagine anybody else a bit down, so it's just that we spend to our income level. And so when something like this happens, if you haven't got 3 months to hold yourself above water, then you either downsize your car or you move to a smaller, accommodation or that sort of thing. So it's just, you can't say it's all about timing because it's never a good time, but it just seems to me that at this time, boy, not good. But however, it happens.
Yeah. And that was the shock that we're talking about. How do we, maybe we've got to have 4 months in reserve. That's the future that we should be looking at for, and it doesn't matter what role you're in. And that's just the nature of the world that we've come to be in at this time.
Yes. And you just, we often hear about, in business, you've got to learn to pivot. And I think perhaps we in our own lives, we have to learn to pivot as much as we can and, that sort of thing. And I know that some people are right now. And that's a good thing because you've got to be able to, I don't think we should go through life always having to watch our pennies. And I know for a lot of people, they have to do that. But sometimes it would be nice to have a bit of headspace, a few discretionary dollars put aside so that when something comes up that gives you joy, makes you happy, then you can say, well, we can take that trip down south or we can go to Australia to see the Mokopuna graduate. And those are the things. Otherwise life can be, it can be just so somehow the joy will go.
Yeah.
But anyway,
it would become mundane. Yeah.
Yes, that's right. Well, listen, it's been lovely talking with you this evening. It has, and I hope you're well. And I don't see you much, and I haven't. Well, I see our mates slowly getting back on top. I do hope so.
I was talking with him yesterday. We had a bit of a giggle the other day, and that's right. I think the last time we met, we were in Rotorua. That's right. Yeah. No, he's doing all right, and he's I think he's getting a little bit stir crazy sitting in one space. So that means he's got to start stirring up everybody else and look out.
Oh yes, that's right. Once I don't doubt Brent. He'll make up for lost time at some stage.
Definitely.
Thank you so much. Lovely to talk with you on Radio Wānanui this evening. Kia ora, Brent.
Thank you very much.
Kia ora. Yep.